Welcome here to Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora on wakeupcalldt.com here on the homepage and on mixlr.com/wakeupcalldt, the live feed that you're listening either directly to on the app or on wakeupcalldt.com. So however you're listening, thank you so much for tuning into the show. Jam-packed show today, a lot to get into. But before we go anywhere, I have on the phone right now me, Mr. Lazarus Sims of the Syracuse Orange, an alum of the team, someone who was just honored for the time that Syracuse went to the Final Four and unfortunately lost in the championship game, but a team that wasn't expected to get to the tournament, get through the tournament, get to where they are, a team that faced adversity and handled it all too well. And got to where nobody thought they would be except for themselves. And John Wallace and Lazarus Sims talked about that a little bit. But to talk a little bit more extensively here with me, I'm very happy to have the former Syracuse point guard here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora. So first and foremost, Lazarus, how you doing?
I'm all right, Dan. How's it going this morning?
I'm doing well. And Lazarus, you know, today us talking kind of comes with a little bit of a heavy heart, and I'll be saying more about it as it comes, as it goes on in Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora here on the show today. But I know that obviously you being a part of this community in a big way through the new job that you have and in general just your love for the community, just what you can say about obviously not knowing Maddox Lawrence personally, I didn't either, but just to the community at a time where everybody really needs to come together, in my opinion.
Yeah, everybody needs to come together, and we as adults need to understand that kids cannot be our casualties in our discrepancies or in our relationships. We're here to guide them and help them and hopefully push them into a better future and to be able to thrive. We can't use them as a tool to take it out on our spouses, our girlfriends, our boyfriends. It's a heavy heart to see a young kid, a baby, say, to fall into play into someone's relationship and then just be harmed in any way. And unfortunately, it ended with a death. But any harm to a child by a peer or an adult or any form of that matter is just irreversible.
And as we move forward here, Lazarus, what can you say about, you know, this community and what your expectations are and what you see? Because your job has obviously become important in Onondaga community and in where we are, not just that you're a former basketball player, but that every single day your job entails you making sure that this is a place that is safe for kids, good for families. So what can you say about kind of how you look at it from your perspective at this point?
Well, let's be clear. We have a great city. Syracuse is a great city. It has great people in it, people with good hearts. It's unfortunate that some people in their hearts is ill will towards others, however it be. But to be a parent, to be a commissioner of parks and recreation for the city of Syracuse, it's just tough. Because my job as a parent and as a commissioner is to make sure children are safe and children feel comfortable and feel good about themselves and want to see us as adults, as people that will guide them, as people that won't harm them, and people that are there to just be very loving to them. So it hurts my heart to see things like this happen for children, teenagers, even adults. Like, our world is too short, life's too short to do these things and to have ill will toward others. There's enough room for everyone to be happy and thrive.
And when you look at your job of commissioner of parks and recreation in the city of Syracuse, what can you say about the youth and what you want to do and what you want to see? Because obviously, I mean, you grew up playing on a playground. I grew up playing on a playground, whether it was basketball or monkey bars or whatever it may be. We both grew up kind of knowing that you're out there, you're in the community, your parents let you go out, but it's not always a safe place. It's not always the best facilities. It's not always the best city to be in when you look around our country. What can you say about what your vision is and what your hopes are as a commissioner of Parks and Rec for the city of Syracuse and kind of how you see things, knowing that the youth is so important to have those places that they can go to and get out of the house for a little while and enjoy themselves and have fun and know that they're safe and that they can be around the community?
Yeah, my vision, and Mayor Miner brought me in with my vision of getting people back into the park. If you get people into the park or into public areas, the less the crime rate is, the less the danger is, because eyes are there, activity's there. Danger happens when there's a lull in activity. There's a lull in people being out and eyes on. That's when bad people do bad things, when they have time to fester in their mind and they're bored. Like it says, idle hands, you know, make devil worship. So what it does is my vision is to get kids in the park, to get families in the park. Like you said, myself and you, we grew up in the park. Parks were always driving. If one park wasn't on, we were able to jump on our bikes or walk to the next park and join another crew. And it's tough with Syracuse right now because these guys are divided. Kids nowadays don't even want to go to a park this year that because of what side of town they grew up on, that the other side, where that park they end up 2-3 blocks away, that someone might not like them just because of what park or what street they grew up on.
How do you kind of handle that? I mean, like you said, getting kids back into the parks, how do you handle the whole, you know, if you're from this side, then we don't want you at this park? How do you handle that? How much of that are you involved with or want to be involved with?
Well, I'm fully committed into it. I'm fully committed to that. That some adults, you don't own these streets. You don't, half of these adults that claim and don't want people in their neighborhoods don't even own the houses or even rent the house. You live with their parents. So they could claim and say, you can't come in my neighborhood or on my block that you don't own or don't pay rent on is preposterous to me. So for kids to feel that they can't go to another silent town, like I said, I rode my bike from South Side to East Side, Des Moines, all over the city, and had no reservations about it. So it's also a lack of knowledge. These kids just grow up under the situation thinking they can't go. So it's already in their mind, so they haven't even attempted to go. They just know, oh, I was told I can't go there. And that might not be the circumstance anymore, but lack of knowledge is a problem. So I think we need to educate these kids and also put in a place where each park is what we're trying to do, which we do is our parks have games between the parks. So they'll go to different parks and play each other or meet at a neutral site, so that these kids can start having a dialogue with each other through sports, and eventually it'll carry off the court or off the gridiron or off the tennis court that, you know, we can talk. We have something in common, and maybe one of these kids from the South Side will invite an East Side kid over to their house and to form a relationship, and it'll start there. It starts with just one person.
Well, what's kind of, before we look at, you know, your history with Syracuse on the basketball court, Lazarus, what are some of your key things, some of the things in 2016 you're really focused on? I know you went into some of that just now, but what are some of those pieces that you really want to see done this coming year that you're looking forward to in helping the youth and the families and the community of Central New York?
We're doing a lot of things in our park. We are doing a lot of clinics, and the Parks and Recreation has been big with that every year. But we're trying to focus on more clinics in each park to bring other parks to those parks. So, like I said, our parks are kind of an eyesore because a lot of kids in different neighborhoods don't even know the amenities of other parks because they're scared to go in that side of town. So our goal this year is to, we have a bus, we rent buses at times for kids. And we're going to be taking them around to different parks and showing them, you know, different sides of town. Each park is shaped and molded differently. So if you go to different parks, you might see something that you don't have in your park. And then you're going to go home and tell your parent, well, I've seen this park and this and that park. I love that. Can we go to that park today?
And looking at kind of how you grew up and what you've been through, when you look at adversity, Lazarus, what can you say about your own? Like you said, some people don't feel safe. They don't want to go to a certain part. Some people don't want them playing on their team if they came from this side of town and not their side of town. What adversity do you kind of take into your job and what you do from what you've been through and what you've seen in your life? Are there any instances in your life that you kind of look back to as learning tools when you try to teach kids today?
Yeah, to be honest, yeah, I think it's a real big cop-out when kids say, well, I don't have
And when you look back to all of that and you look to where you've come today, I want to go back to that time at Syracuse and what it meant to you. Recently, your team was honored, and believe it or not, from 96 to 2016, 20 years ago, to be honored in that. It seems crazy that two decades have passed in between, and I want to start there with you, Lazarus. Is it strange for you to hear 20 years ago the team went to the Final Four that you were the point guard of? Is that weird to kind of look at that number and know that it was two decades ago?
Yeah, when I got the call and they said they were throwing a 20-year anniversary, I was like, for what? I'm thinking high school. And they're like, no, you're 96. And I looked at the calendar and I said, oh, Mark, I said, oh, I feel dated now. I feel old. I just felt dated.
When you look back on it, you were talking with John Wallace after being honored at halftime at the Syracuse-Pittsburgh game, and you had said that you and John both believed that this was going to happen, that you were going to get there. This is a team that had belief in themselves. Even if nobody else did on the outside, you believed that you would get there. What made you and John and your teammates believe that the team in 95-96 was worthy enough and good enough to get to the Final Four?
Well, I'll go back to when we first started our conversation. The way I was raised, my family, I was raised to the park. I was raised to earn them, like you said. Grew up with playing on the monkey bars and playgrounds and all that stuff. And my park was the skirt park. You started out at the monkey bars. You went to play basketball at the monkey bars. You got better and then you got on the court. And then when you got on the court, you weren't allowed to shoot. You were just out there to pass and dribble and play defense. So you figured it out or you earned it. Like, it wasn't a right of – it was a right of pass, but you earned your right. So, yeah, myself and John grew up together from sixth grade on. We earned it. It was instilled in me from my high school coach, my AU coach, Joe Mazzella, passed away, and my AU coach, Mickey Walker, and the same coach that John had. And you're the best player out there. You show it. You believe it. And you go out there and you establish yourself. And you have no waiver in how you believe in yourself. And I always felt I was the best point guard in the country. John felt he was the best forward in the country. And if you have those two alpha egos and that actually mesh together, if you have a good combination from how you think about it, that's your tail and that's your head. That's your point guard. You got your finisher, and now the pieces in between mesh very well because we all genuinely like each other. And I think they particularly loved each other.
And having time with John, what did you take away from John Wallace? What do you feel like he took away from you? When you look back on the first time that you guys met to getting to the Final Four together, bring me through some of those initial moments, some of those initial interactions where you felt like, hey, maybe we can help each other out someday.
We first met at the AAU with Mickey Walker, and he was Rochester, well, Syracuse, Mickey was from Syracuse, Rochester, and Buffalo. So we would meet in between Syracuse and Buffalo with Rochester. So I practiced sometimes St. John Fisher and Rochester, and we would meet in scrimmage, practice a little bit. We scrimmage, we played all the time. So first meeting with John was, I'm a tall, skinny kid. I jump the ball, and John, tall, skinny, taller than me. He jumped the ball, he walks to the center, he runs, that's what he talks trash. I'm from Syracuse, I got the skinny kid, I got the skinny white kid, too. We jump ball, we win the pass. So I started handling the rock. I'm the point guard, he didn't know. He just saw skinny dog, and I was tall on my side. So he was like, I got the skinny dog, kid. I start handling the rock. John goes up, somebody else gets it, he's the point guard. So that was our introduction. And then as the game went on, I figured I got to guard him, he had to guard me. And we just, the bond was different. We wasn't giving each other anything, but we respected each other. So I made a move, or he made a move. Next, in between breaks, it was like, show me your move. Show me that move you just did. Show me that move you just did. And it was like, I'm going to get it. So it was at AAU times and on trips, like, we wouldn't go to sleep. John would come to my room, show me this move. So I took from his drive. John wanted to be the best. John wanted to know everything. So in an AAU game or playing someone, I made a move or something that he liked, he would come knocking on my door, show me that that move. But honestly, if they're going to show me that move, I'm not leaving until you show it to me until I get it. You know, so John was always a constant. I'm going to get it. I'm going to be the best one. So he wanted to learn my skills. I learned his skills. So we kind of fed off each other.
Now, obviously, as a guard and John Wall is playing inside, the expectation is not for him to shoot the three. But there was a time, obviously, in the tournament where he took that three. And when I talked to him about it, he said, you know, I trust myself to make it. I told the guys I was going to make it. That was me. That was the shot for me to take. What was going through your mind when big old John Wallace came down the court and decided that he was going to take that three?
That was his shot to take. That was his moment. But to be honest, I had just hit the two threes, get us back into the game. We were, you know, mentally going our way. We just went over, they hit that fade away. We went over time. So, you know, four or five of us were clicking anyway, so anybody could have took that shot. But John being our support and our face of our program, that shot and make that shot. And in my mind, and John was the same way. I'm taking the last shot. I'm the quiet leader of the team, John the face of the team, and a leader. He's running, he's dribbling down the court. If you watch the clip, I'm back going, and I'm yelling at him the whole way down, give me the ball. And, you know, we had those situations in practice where, you know, he would handle the rock, and I'm going to let him handle the rock and make moves and do things. But if he messed up, then Bayham would yell at him, give me the ball. But if he did it, it was no problem. So at the same time, we're running. It's first time. I'm like, look, give me a rock. We're running down for it. He raises up, and I yell at him, better have to make this shot.
And he did.
And he thinks it. So I'm kind of playing defense on him. So, you know, as a shooter, your teammate can't be yelling, hey. So I'm pretty much kind of defense too, but I'm yelling at him, you better have to make it. You know, that we did enough friends where I can talk to him that way. Then he dunked it, then there you go.
When you look back on being a runner-up in the NCAA Final Four in the championship game, when you look back on that moment, you look back on Kentucky, you look back at Rick Pitino and all that was, Rick seems to have the number of Syracuse. He's pretty even back and forth with Jim Boeheim in their head-to-head contact, especially now being at Louisville. What is it about that game? When you look back, I mean, Rick was a former assistant of Jim Boeheim. How difficult was that game when you see the game, when you go back to it, when you envision it in your mind again? What was it about Rick, Kentucky, that moment that you got there, but there was just a little bit more to be had that didn't come through?
To be honest, I've never watched that game, so I can't tell you that guy. When we talk about it, if you get bring it up, and I think about it, and I think about the different scenarios that could happen, I think if I didn't get hurt, I think if me and John, the miscommunication of the glass foul, that doesn't happen, which has never happened, you play together. If it happens, then the game is different. I felt that we were the better team. Did they have the better on paper team? Yeah. I felt that we were the better team overall. So we both felt, we always talk about it, that scenario changes. If I'm not hurt early in the game, and he doesn't foul out, and I have to championship.
Even though you didn't get that championship, when you look back on it, John Wallace comes back for his senior season. You're there. You had to work to get the job that you got. You had to work to be in the position you were in. And you look at Todd Bergen, Jason Cipolla, Otis Hill, Marius Janulis, J.B. Reefsnyder, Alvira Ovchina, the list goes on and on and on. When you look at that team, even though you didn't hoist a trophy, do you honestly look back at your teammates, at that moment, at yourself, and know you gave it all you could, and as far as you're concerned, you're a part of Syracuse history? In my opinion, even though there's no championship, you're one of the greatest moments in Syracuse history. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, that's the difference. Like, we didn't host the trophy. We didn't host the trophy up, but I think we hoisted the city up. Like, we lifted the city up and brought up, and they enjoyed the ride with us. Was different from the 2003 team that won a championship. I don't think kind of raised the city up with us, and it brought the city and the university together.
You had an interesting person on your team in the sense of you don't really see it anymore in Division I basketball, football, crossing over, in the fact that even though he didn't play a lot and he got in for a few minutes at a time, only played five games, what was it like having Donovan McNabb on the basketball team, seeing now what he has become, where he has gotten to? He's obviously broadcasting and whatnot now, but to see how effective he was on the football field, how much he did in the NFL, when you had him on the team, what was life like? Because it seemed like he was kind of trying to be the comic relief as well as some of the other guys on the team. What was it like looking back, having Donovan on the basketball team, knowing obviously what he's become?
Well, he wasn't trying to be the comic relief. He was, we had a great crew. He was just Donovan. I called him Chunk, because he was chunky. Just because he was chunky, but he was so athletic. Like Donovan used to jump on the foul line and dunk the ball from half court. Like Donovan was a great athlete back then. Donovan was actually on dual scholarship, partial scholarship, basketball and football. So for him to be on the team, he was already supposed to be on there anyway. In fact, he was playing football half of the season, part of our season, then came in late. Donovan was a great athlete. Shoot the ball, crazy range. A lot of people didn't know that about him. He was the strongest kid on his football team in the weight room, and probably one of the fastest on his football team. And with us, the same. He brought a toughness to us. He brought a lightheartedness to us because of his success on the football field. The basketball game was lighthearted to him and easy to him, and it carried over to our guys that didn't play because they watched him. They watched this guy as having football success come over to the basketball field and have success in practice and be lighthearted and be a part of a team and not have an ego saying, man, I'm a starting quarterback. I should be on the court as well. He didn't have that. He joined in with us. He didn't come in with ulterior motives of, you know, sabotaging the team and trying to get on the court. He came in as a part of us, as an extension, and we supported him while he played football as well.
When you see kind of where your team was, Lazarus, that you were, like you said, you were projected to lose every game. You weren't expected to get into the tournament, to get to the Final Four, to get to the championship game. Do you see any similarities between your team and the current 2015-16 basketball team? Are there any things that you can parallel between the two on a team where there isn't a lot of expectation this year?
Probably that point, that there isn't a lot of expectations, but as you know, when you get in the tournament, all you have to do is have a good night. And you don't have to have a great night. The other team just has to not be on all cylinders, and you just have to be steady and stay your course. I think they have a chance. If they make the tournament, I think they have a good chance. I think they have great players. College-wise, I think Michael does a great job. I think Trevor does a great job under the scrutiny that he gets. And that he got coming in. He was supposed to be the next apparent Jerry McNamara. That's a tough shoe to fill coming in, especially when a guy won a championship. Every time you take a shot, that's what you're geared to. That's what you looked at. And you're supposed to, Jerry made that shot. Why he didn't make that shot? That's tough. That kid has endured a lot of mental toughness and mental cruelty from fans, unwarranted and, you know, rightfully so. We're athletes, and what if they got to understand that these kids have skin and that, you know, we're athletes, but our skin is like your skin. If you don't want somebody coming into your office and scrutinize you, you got a typo on your paper every time you have a typo. But, you know, that's the feel we take. But I do think they go with what Tyler Roberson does. He's an introverted guy, so he's kind of, I can't say I was that way, but I was the quiet. I just got my job done. So those games he gets his job done, they look real well. He makes it easier for everyone else. I think that will help them, and that's their connection to us is certain guys, they do their job, the team looks great. If they're off or they waver a little bit, the team looks terrible. There's no middle line to either. They look great or they look terrible.
Before I let you go, Lazarus, finishing up here, one of the things you brought in, Tyler Roberson, on this current team, he's the guy that, like you said, some of the guys on the team, the way that they go is how the team goes. And when you look back on it, research 2015-16 season, when Tyler Roberson gets a double-double, Syracuse is 6-0. They're perfect. They're 100% when he gets a double-double, but it doesn't happen often. He obviously endured some words. You talked about Trevor Cooney going through a lot of verbal attacks, so to speak. Jim Boeheim, who obviously was your coach that you spent a lot of time around, he decided in post-game, as he does with some players, to call out Tyler Roberson, but made the statement, if I had anybody else, he wouldn't play a minute. There's been a lot of reaction to that it was a little bit too harsh. When you hear that statement from Boeheim toward a player, having him been your coach, what kind of words do you have for Tyler Roberson, and do you think it was a little bit too forceful of a statement to make, kind of?
I don't. I think these young kids, I think a lot of people read into what they hear instead of what he's saying. Because on the other hand, if Tyler is doing a double-double, then he wants five Tylers. So what he's saying, if I had another player, that night, if I had another player, I'd play somebody else. But the night Tyler is doing what Tyler does, you don't get those commentations. You don't get those comments. And he knows his kids. He knows to push his kids' button. Like that Tyler is a kind of introverted type person, personality-wise, where it might affect us as listeners. Like for me, if he said that about John or myself, I'm going to go and show you that this is why I'm on your team. This is why I'm your leader. Some people couldn't do that with Lawrence Moulton or certain other people. He couldn't go at them that way. And he knew it. So he would tell us, don't jump on his throat. Don't jump down his back. Don't jump down Marius's back. That's not how you can handle it. Like, I can go at John, cut John out, grab John, shake John. John can do the same to me. And next play down, I forgot about it, and I'm also angry that I'm going to do my job.
Right.
So it's a line to it. I really don't think he crossed it. I think he's trying to get Tyler to understand, we go as you go. Michael Benajay is the standout guy and probably the best guy on the team. But to be honest, you got a 6'9 kid that can do all the things he's doing. To me, Tyler Roach is probably the best player on the team. Has he shown it every night? No, but if he shows his package, he's the best athlete and player on the team.
And finally, when he made that statement, when Boeheim said, if I had anybody else, he wouldn't play a minute, it kind of made me think a little bit deeper into it as far as Caleb Joseph goes, because there's a game where Boeheim cleared the bench, took all the walk-ons, put him out onto the court, not Caleb Joseph. He played some minutes early on in the season, but hasn't been in games recently in multiple games. And when he made that statement, if I had anybody else, that Tyler wouldn't play a minute, I thought, okay, so obviously you don't think you have Caleb Joseph. You were a point guard with Syracuse. You made mistakes. You had positive points. Caleb got an opportunity to be a starting point guard as a freshman. He's gotten nothing since then. Do you look at him and say that he's as good as gone at this point, knowing that he's not one of the guys that Boeheim thinks that he can go out and utilize anymore?
Yeah, because you got to give your coach confidence. You got to do things in practice. You got to do things and opportunities you get to make coach say, okay, maybe give you more minutes, or I can trust him that he's not going to make mistakes. Caleb plays and looks at the bench the whole time. He's already making mistakes because he's not playing for himself. He's not playing for his teammate. I think Caleb checked out a long time ago. So like I said, some people can handle the mental part of Boeheim. Some people can't. I don't think he was one of those kids that could handle it. Caleb was starting and still was looking at the bench like he was on thin as the needles. And to be honest, it took me 2 years to understand, like, I'm going to go out, be it myself. He's going to accept it. He's going to shut me out. I know he's going to shut me out. So I'm going to go in and do what I need to do. I can't control him shoving me out. I think if Caleb wouldn't be in that equation, like, the statement of, if I had somebody else, I wouldn't play Tyler Taylor. Caleb wouldn't be in that equation just because whole different position. If he had another big guy or someone else, like Chino or somebody else, then somebody else, but he doesn't have any confidence in them, and they not showing any confidence, you know, so it's Roberson's fault, but it's not, because that's a team. If I made a mistake, you know, David Patrick went in and did his job, Donovan did his job at some point, even Jason played the point in the final game when I went out. I handled some point position when I was out under the bench getting my x-ray. You know, so guys step up because they can and because they show coach they can.
And in stepping up, I think the easiest way to finish up here, Lazarus, and I always appreciate having you on the show, is to truly say, if the Cuse is in the house, and I'm going to let you finish it.
Oh, my God.
I think, honestly, that's probably the chant above all things that have ever been said at Syracuse University that has withstood the test of time. Even on the national championship team in 2003, there wasn't a chant like that. So I know that, you know, you obviously have rich history and you're trying to build a positive present and future to create a good history for Syracuse with the parks and recreation, and I appreciate that as well. So to what you gave to Syracuse prior to and what you're giving to Syracuse now, you know that I appreciate it, and I appreciate having you on the show.
Thanks, man. And to that chant, I think it'll last, and the guys should understand it. The guys are there now. Because the chant was to let people know that we were in your building, or you were in our building, and we wasn't going easy.
And you didn't...
Let you know we're something to take over your court, whether it's neutral court, your home court, or our home court. We were coming to take over your court, and we were here.
And it's definitely something, like you said, it has lasted, it will last, and it's definitely something to appreciate 20 years later and even beyond that. So, Lazarus, as always, thank you, and, of course, I look forward to talking with you soon.
All right, boy, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, Dan.
All right, take care. That coming from Lazarus Sims, Syracuse Orange men's basketball point guard of the past and the commissioner of Parks and Recreation for the city of Syracuse in the present and the future. So I want to thank Lazarus Sims for everything that he's done for the community, everything that he did on the court, and of course, when the Cuse is in the house, oh my God, one of the best chants to ever be made, created, happen in history when it comes to the world of sports, because everybody knows it. It's withstood the test of time. It's withstood 20 years. So credit to Lazarus, John Wallace, as well as the rest of the team, Jason Cipolla, Todd Bergen, Otis Hill, Marius Janulis, J.B. Reef-Snyder, J.B. or David Patrick, Donovan McNabb, Elvira Ovchina, on and on and on and on. To everybody that was a part of the team, Jakarl Riggins, Jim May, Eric Frazier, Jim Hayes, Alimu Nelson, and Bobby Lazor. Congratulations to everything that those gentlemen did, and I know Syracuse fans will always remember them, not for the game they lost, but for all the games they won, and how they did it, and how much fun they brought to the community.